Okay, let's see. Any questions from the previous class or anything? Questions about that? Last class we were talking about string matching. We started talking about exact string matching algorithms. Are there any questions about homework or exact string matching algorithms before I move on today to approximate string matching? Questions, comments? Okay, so what I'd like to talk about today is something that is a... Last class we talked about string matching, exact string matching. Today I'd like to talk about a problem that's even more important, especially in biology, that of approximate string matching. And it is something that arises in biology for a couple of different reasons, okay? The primary reason it arises, okay, is because of evolution, okay? We understand that because of evolution, species diverge over time. We understand that the same gene, basically, that does something useful probably appears in two neighboring species. But there's going to be mutations along the way. There's going to be some bases will have changed in ways that don't change the protein, okay, but leave the protein the same. Remember, the DNA is coding for a gene and coding for a protein. Sometimes there's slight changes to the protein itself that don't prevent it from functioning, okay? And so as these species diverge, the proteins get more and more distant, the genes get more and more distant, but in any reasonable, over a reasonable length of time, there's still going to be similarity there to be seen. And so the reason why biologists, or in computational genomics, the reason why we're going to be most interested in approximate string matching is to try to identify, given two sequences, where are there distantly related parts of those, where are those parts of those two sequences from different species, let's say. Try to identify which parts of the sequences are conserved, meaning they appear roughly, they are roughly the same in both organisms. Any questions? Is that motivation clear, or it should be kind of clear? For computer scientists, approximate string matching comes up in other applications that you're familiar with, things like spell checking. You'd like to sort of be able to look at a document, you know, let's say you want to look up something and you misspell a word, okay? You'd still like to be able to know where does this word that you misspelled, where does it appear roughly in the document? And that becomes an approximate string matching problem. Or if you use the Unix program DIF, how many people here have ever used the Unix program DIF? Okay, a bunch of people, that's good. Okay, that's a program that given two files tells you where they differ. The algorithm that is based on is basically the approximate string matching algorithm that we'll talk about today. Okay, so approximate string matching is an important problem. And I'm going to guess a bunch of people have seen, how many people have seen algorithms for approximate string matching before in some context? Raise your hand. I'm getting about, or edit distance. Does that sound more familiar? How many people does that sound familiar to? I'm going to guess it looks like about a quarter of the class. Okay? I'm going to go and explain, even though a lot of people have seen that, although by no means a majority. Okay, I want to explain the approximate string matching algorithm because, first of all, it's very important and a lot of people haven't seen it. But even if you have seen it, I think you'll see a couple of tricks to it, or new tricks or new ends to it that might make that interesting. Okay? So when we talk about approximate string matching, we're going to be talking about basically you have to come up with a measure of the distance between strings, okay, that makes some sense. Okay? And the following idea is sort of the basis behind our definition of string distance. We're going to say that if we have two strings that we want to measure how similar they are or how different they are, we're going to measure it in terms of the minimum number of changes you have to make to convert one string to another. Okay, so how can we convert one string to another? We can perform the following kind of change. We perform a substitution, a character change. Like suppose we want to change the word shot to spot. They're very similar words. They differ in only one position. The way to turn shot to spot is to substitute the H and replace it by P. Okay? And that's a substitution. Sometimes we can, two different character strings will differ by one insertion. Suppose you want to change the word ago to agog. All that you have to do to make that thing is one change, namely inserting a G at the end of ago to turn it into agog. Sometimes you have to delete a character to make the strings the same. So to change our, H-O-U-R, to our, O-U-R, okay? It's a simple matter of deleting the H from the first one, okay? So our notion of string similarity is going to be in terms of the smallest number or the least expensive sequence of insertions, substitutions, and deletions. Okay, between two strings. Any questions about that? Okay. Yes? So the question is, do we assign the same weight to insertion, deletion, and substitution? The answer is it depends what you want to do. Okay? So we should agree that assigning different, depending upon what weights the costs we assign to those operations, we're going to get different answers. Okay? Suppose substitution, suppose to substitute an H to a P is very expensive. Let's say I'm going to charge you $1 for an insertion, $1 for a deletion, and $5 for a substitution of one character. What is the cheapest way to convert shot to spot? Yeah? Delete the H, and then insert a P to match the other one, P, right? So you have to delete this, delete one, and insert the other. So if, on the other hand, substitutions are cheaper than the cost of an insertion or deletion, it's better to do a substitution. So the question of what the actual cheapest sequence will depend is going to depend upon the costs that we might use assigned to operations. Okay? And this is going to make a big difference because trying to figure out what the right cost function is, okay, is going to vary based on your application. Okay? In DNA sequences, as we will see, sometimes certain conversions, like changing an A to a T, is cheaper than changing an A to a G. Okay? It's more likely to happen in evolution. Okay? So you'd like to make that be a cheaper operation. Where sometimes deleting things isn't so bad, okay? So depending upon what you want to do, the costs you assign to those operations will alter the final transcript that you produce. We want an algorithm that, given the cost for substitutions, given the cost for deletions, given the costs for insertions, finds the cheapest sequence, okay? We want one algorithm that will hold for all, for a large class of cost functions, okay? Any questions? Okay. What is the difference between insertion and deletion here? Okay, this is one thing that I find always gets confusing. And the answer is it depends upon who you're talking about. Okay? It's not clear that, if you think of it as a pattern in a text, insertion might be inserting something into the text that wasn't in the pattern. And pattern was inserting something that's in the pattern. Deletion might be inserting something in the pattern that wasn't in the text. Okay? So insertion and deletion are sort of basically the same thing. And in fact, when we talk about it today, we'll be talking about indel as the operation, which would mean either an insertion or a deletion. Okay? It may be in your application, insertions somehow have more meaning than deletions. In general, they're about the same. Okay? But that depends on you. Any questions? Okay, so the three operations that we're allowed to do are insertions, deletions, and substitutions. And when computer scientists think about measuring the distance between strings, they tend to think in terms of measuring a real distance function. Euclidean, what's the distance between me and you? Well, it's a Euclidean distance. We can measure it knowing geometry. Okay? The edit distance is defined as the minimum number of insertions, deletions, and substitutions to transform one string to another. Now, what's interesting is the edit distance satisfies a lot of the properties that we associate with any distance function, any reasonable distance function. Mathematically, we say that a distance measure is a metric if it satisfies certain sort of properties that we would expect any distance function to have. For example, the distance between any two strings should be greater than or equal, okay, for all pairs of strings. That's certainly true in Euclidean distance. I mean, how far apart are you from me? Well, it's either a positive number or zero, okay? We say that the distance is between two things is zero if and only if they're the same thing. The distance from me to me is zero, okay? The distance from me to any of you is greater than zero, okay? And this is a property that we sort of assume holds for distance. Distance is symmetric. We know that the distance from X to Y is the same as the distance from Y to X. Okay, I am as far from you as you are from me. Okay? And finally, we assume that distance tends to satisfy the triangle inequality. What is the triangle inequality? That the distance from X to Y is less than or equal to the distance from X to Z plus the distance from Z to Y for all X, Y, and Z. What does that mean? That the shortest distance between me and you, you cannot make it shorter, that dxy measures the actual distance from me to you. You can't find the shorter way to get from me to you by going through some third party. Okay, that's really what it says. Okay, that there is no, that for any intermediate point z, the distance of walking first to Z and then from Z to Y, okay, is greater than walking from X to Y, greater than or equal to walking to X to Y. All of these are natural properties of distance measure, the Euclidean distance measure, okay, and they're all sort of nice properties we expect distance measures to have. Distance measures that have these properties are called metrics. In fact, the edit distance we just talked about between strings satisfies all these properties. So this is why computer scientists get very excited about edit distance as a measure of string distance. It has nice properties, and as we can show, it can be easily computed. Any questions about that? Yes? Okay, so you're 100% right. So the is it possible to set costs on certain edit distance so that the distance is not symmetric? The answer is yes, that's certainly possible. Under this classical edit distance measure, we just count the number of insertions, deletions, and substitutions. So under those costs, the costs of 1, 1, and 1, it is a metric. It is probably possible to set the costs in such a way that it's not a metric. Okay, but that's pretty clear. That you could make converting an A to a Z cheap and converting a Z to an A extremely expensive. Okay? So, but under the standard classical edit distance measure, you get that distance is a metric. Okay, and this is good. This is why computer scientists like to talk about edit distance. Now, as we will see, biologists do not like to talk about edit distance. Okay? They have a different notion of string. If you think about it, a distance function is not a measure really of similarity. It's a measure of dissimilarity. How far away are we? Okay? Edit distance, biologists are going to be more interested in what they will call a similarity score, which for two sequences is a number that gets larger the more similar the sequences are. Okay, in distances, in a distance function, the more similar things are, the closer they are, the closer they are, and so the smaller that number is. In a similarity score, the more similar they are, the larger the number is. Okay, and when biologists look at analyzing DNA sequences, they are much more excited by similarity scores than distance. Okay? Algorithmically, they're very similar. It's not, as we'll see, I'll talk about edit distance most of today, but at the end, I'll talk about an algorithm that computes similarity scores, and it's essentially the same algorithm. Okay? But keep in mind that we're looking at distance, and they're looking at scores. Okay? Any questions? Okay? And you'll see there's good reasons for that. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Good. So let's look at an algorithm that, given two strings, okay, computes the edit distance between them, the minimum, the cheapest sequence of operations to transform one string into another. The idea behind this algorithm, this is an algorithm that is a recursive algorithm. And I'm actually giving you honest C code here for the implementation of the algorithm. Okay? So this is something that will run and is an honest thing that will work. The idea of the sequence, the sort of sequence comparison algorithm is it's a recursive algorithm that looks at the last character of the two strings we want to compare. Let's say I want to transform a string, let's say schema, into something else, let's say skiing. Okay? There's going to be a sequence of insertions and deletions and substitutions that transform this to that. And we want to compute what the minimum cost transformation is. Okay? The algorithm is a recursive algorithm. It observes that we have to do something with the last characters in the string. Right? If we're transforming schema to skiing, somehow there's going to have to be a G stuck on the end of this thing. Right? Now, where could the G come from? It could come from adding a G to the end. It could come from changing this A to a G, okay, which would be cheap given my handwriting, since A and G look very similar. Okay? Or it could come from deleting the G from the pattern. Right? That there's three possible things we can do at the end of the alignment. Okay, I always get confused when I say insertion and deletion, they're symmetric things. And I don't know, I can get confused whether I'm talking about insertion or deletion. Okay? But it's pretty clear that I can do one of two things if you want. I can either, to convert schema to skiing, I can either substitute the A and the G to make them match. I can get rid of the A from schema, or I can get rid of the G from schema. Those are three possible options, and those are the only three possible options to end the picture. Okay? Is that clear? You're saying... Well, no, okay, I don't think of insertion, that you can't make the decision about insertion or deletion based solely on the length of the word. Suppose, let's say that, because it could very well be that in the act of matching the earlier part of the string, you made it longer by doing some insertions. Okay? So it could very well be you have, let's say, a situation like you have the word schema, you have the word XXX schema, and maybe this thing ends in an X. The right way to convert this string to that would be to insert three of them here and insert one of them here, right? So here the shorter string, both the shorter and the longer strings are getting things inserted into them or deleted from. Okay?
Aren't we changing this one string?
Okay, so the question is a question of how you look at what operations you're doing. I'm trying to find the shortest way, the cheapest way to transform this string to that string. Okay? You're right that maybe the right way to think about it is we hold one of the strings fixed and we're doing all our operations on the other one. In which case, to get to XXX schema, what we had to do was do an insert, 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 match, 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 delete. Okay? So that's probably the right way to think about it if you want. Okay, if you start with one string, we're going to be performing a sequence of operations to it, okay, to transform it to the second string. And now you can see it can involve insertions and deletions, okay? And in fact, if we want to change the E here to another E, we might have a substitution in there as well. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So I want to give you a recursive algorithm to find the shortest, the cheapest sequence of transformations you need to go from spring S to spring T. Okay? And basically my algorithm is to go take a look at, let I and J be the positions of the last character in the string. Okay? We know that we're going to have to do something at the rightmost end. Either we're going to match the last two characters of each string, meaning that we're either going to say they're equal or we're going to pay a substitution cost, or we're going to do a deletion of the last character from the string, or a deletion of the last character from the pattern. Okay? Those are the three possibilities. The question of which is the best one can't be made locally just based on the cost of those operations. The cost of actually doing a transformation is once we have done that match, the total cost of the job is the cheapest way to align any prefix. Let's say we want to figure out what's the cost of matching the A and the G in schema. Well, there's a cost for matching A to G, but the cost of the whole job is the cost of matching the prefix skien and skin plus the cost of transforming A to G. Does everybody see that? That if I decide my last step is transforming A to G, then the total cost of the job is the cost of transforming the appropriate prefix of each string plus the cost of the final step. Okay? So what is the cost of actually doing the transformation? It is the cheapest of the three possibilities. When we match two characters, we get a string that both the remaining prefixes are both shorter. Okay? If we delete something from the T string, then that string is shorter. If we delete something from the S string, the first string is shorter. My claim is that the best choice of the last move is determined by the cheapest of these three possibilities, where the possibility is the cost of the local change plus the cost of editing the prefixes, the remaining prefixes of the two strings. Okay? Yes.
So these functions match in Bell represent the cost for matching for substitution and deletion. And what about the two lines above the lines which determine the cost when one of the string is empty?
Okay. So let's
assume that the cost is one per character.
Okay, so let's ignore this for now. That's what you're complaining about. Let's ignore that. That's distracting at the moment. Okay? The important thing is that we are given a choice of three possible transformations for the last match. Okay? And, you know, there's a special case here that's being dealt with. What if one string is empty? What if one string has no text to it? And I just assign those costs to that. I don't want to defend what I'm charging as the cost for in the case of I equals zero means that one string is empty and the other string is empty. I have to return a cost for that. In my particular application, I set the cost of it to be the length of that string.
Yes, but this is equal to inserting.
It should be the length of that thing times the cost of deleting that many characters.
So you should call the function, to calculate this,
I will accept that. Okay. Let's say that my basis case here might be is really for the less general case of string insertion of edit distance. Okay. And that this is somehow allowing for a more general case here, and that would be trouble in a more general case. But the interesting thing here is that I'm taking the minimum of these three possibilities. Okay? And this algorithm is going to work recursively because each of these strings, these cases, is on smaller pairs of strings. So if you know what recursion is, in the to get the answer for the big case, I'm reducing it to smaller cases. When I call those recursively, they're going to solve that smaller case. Bop, 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 bop. Okay? And this, once I get the answer to all three of these smaller cases, I can now make the decision for what should I do for the last character. Okay? And that is how this is going to compute the edit distance. Any questions about this routine? How many people understand this routine? Okay, how many people do not understand this routine and would like more explanation? Okay, question. Okay, so a match is a function I haven't defined that given two characters, the ith character of S and the jth character of T, returns the cost of that match, the distance between those characters. A logical function would be that if they're the same, the cost of matching them is zero. If they're different, the cost of matching them is one. That's what it would do in edit distance. Okay? Any questions? Okay? How much time will this algorithm take to run? This is sort of interesting. What is the time complexity of this algorithm? Okay? How big a string do you think I should be able to run through this algorithm before it takes forever? What was that? Exponential. If you run this program, okay, on a string of size 12, it stops giving me any answers on my computer. Okay? Now, why is that? It's because this is an exponential algorithm because it's working recursively. How many people here are not that familiar with recursion? Okay, a few people will admit it. Okay, presumably the non-computer scientists. Recursion is the technique of a program, a function, calling itself, which is seemingly a strange thing to do. Okay, if you haven't seen this before. Okay, our function string compare is calling string compare on smaller strings. Okay? And we know that when the string gets small enough, it's going to be down to zero, it's going to return an answer. Since every time we're calling it with smaller strings, eventually it gets to an answer. But what happens when we run this thing? Why is this algorithm so slow? Look what's actually happening when we run it on a string here, let's say where S is of length 6 and T is of length 6. Okay? First thing we're going to do is to delete one character from both of them. That's going to start a search from a tree of length 5, 5. Then once we get an answer to that, we're going to compute a search where we took one off the second character. That's a tree where the strings are of length 5 and 6. The third call is going to start another recursive call where the trees are of length 6 and 5. To solve a thing of size 5, 5, that's going to build three descendants as well. Okay? What are they? One is going to be a 4, 4. One is going to be a 4, 5. One is going to be of 5, 4. Okay? We're building a search tree from every such call. Does everybody sort of see what I'm doing, or does anyone want me to explain what this tree is? Any question about what the tree is? Well, what's interesting about it? 5, 5, when we expand, 5, 6, when we expand it a year, is going to have three children as well. That's going to be 4, 5, 5, 5, and 4, 6. The tree here for 5, 5 is exactly the same tree as the tree here for 5, 5. We're going to be computing the same thing twice. And it gets worse. In every subtree here, we're going to have 4, 4. Fairly soon down here, we're going to have 4, 4. We're going to compute it twice. Okay? And if you take a look at this thing, we're going to actually be computing something like 3 to the n. If you have two strings of length n, it's very, very easy to see if you build the tray, it's going to have greater than 3 to the n nodes in it. Okay? This is an exponential algorithm. And the reason it is exponential is because we're doing the same work over and over again on different earth persons' falls. How many people see that? Okay, a lot of people. How many people don't see that? This is an important thing. So if you don't see it, it's a good thing to say, I don't see it. You explain it again. Any questions? Okay? So if this was the algorithm for string edit alignment, this would be bad because all we can do is align strings of length 12. Yes?
It seems that there's no box as well, like, because you define pulp as an array of three elements, so you can say pulp 0, 1, and 2. And in the loop, it says pulp of 3.
Okay, so, you're saying that I should have declared this to be a 4 because, you've now got a coding bug in here, okay? But the important problem, more serious, is the algorithm bug. The reason these bugs exist, I think, is because this is a dead program, okay? This is a program that can't hope to run very well because of the exponential time thing. I set this up as just an example of a very slow program. If we naively implemented the recurrence. Okay? So, what do we hope to do? We can use a technique called dynamic programming. Okay? And dynamic programming is an algorithmic technique that gives you a fast way to implement recurrence relations. Okay? Recursive programs. Okay? To make this program efficient, we have to realize that we're doing the same work over and over and over again. And what's more, we can recognize that we're doing that work over and over again. If you look back at our routine, what are the states? What is the state? What is it that changes every time we call string compare? The two strings themselves are not changing. That argument is the same. The only thing that is changing is the index, the position of the last symbol in the string. Does everybody see that? We're only monkeying with these indices. If this string, the first string is of length n, and the second string is of length m, how many possible values can we have for those two indices? N and M, the first one is going to be telling me where's the last character in a prefix of the first string. The second thing is going to be telling me where is there the character, the prefix of a character of the second string. The number of possible prefixes is exactly equal to the length of the string, right? And this is just chop off, a different subject at a different point each time. So in fact, there are only N squared, or N times M, really different calls to this recursive subroutine. I'm building a tree with an exponential number of nodes in it. But in fact, the number of distinct nodes that appear is only going to be n times m. So what does this tell me? If I keep track of the value of each of these n times m things, and once I've computed it, never computed again, just look it up in a table, then I can hope to reduce this algorithm from exponential to quadratic. Any questions about that? Does everybody sort of see that? Okay. This is the key idea behind dynamic programming. Dynamic programming is an algorithmic technique of efficiently computing recurrence relations, or recursive programs, by storing partial results. Okay. And once you really know, once you understand dynamic programming, it is a very, very simple idea to use, okay? It's a stupid Fed trick among people who know how to do algorithms, okay? People come into me with a problem from time to time, and they start saying, I don't know what I've got to do, I've got two strings. I say, dynamic programming, and their problem is solved, okay? People say, I don't know, I've got these two trees, and I don't know how to compare. Dynamic programming, okay? And the reason is, it is something that works, or tends to work, whenever you've got ordered structures. Things like character strings, ordered, when you're matching them from left to right, there's an order on the things. When you're matching trees, if there's an ordering on the nodes from left to right, the leaves from left to right, dynamic programming will do. Once you see it, it's a very, very simple technique, but a lot of people have a very hard time seeing how it works. Okay, and this example I think I showed you is kind of informative. It shows that if you implement, we start out with a recursive algorithm that we implement naively. Because it is recursive and we're doing a lot of duplication, it takes exponential time. But in fact, analyzing it more closely, we see that there's only a quadratic number of possible different states. And therefore, if we build a table to keep track of those states, the value of those values, we can look everything up in a table instead of recomputing it. That is the idea of dynamic programming. Any questions? Okay. So let's look at a dynamic programming version of this program. Okay. Again, we have the same little bug here that you noticed there, but that we will fix. Okay? The important thing here is, what is the flow of this program? I start out, it's the exact same program you've seen, except that I am now keeping track of a matrix, okay, of cost values and parent values. Again, if we looked at the previous slide, I define a table, which is an array, a matrix of, for every possible prefix of the first, for every possible prefix of the second, I'm going to keep track of two things. What is the cost of the match of those two prefixes? And what is the parent element that got me there? Okay? This latter thing is probably not completely necessary, but it's useful, and you'll see why in a few minutes. What my function now looks like is the following. Okay? I start out, I initialize my dynamic programming matrix to the values, basically to initialize the row, the first row and column of my matrix. What does that mean? Suppose, let's say, I want to compare ski not as skiing. Okay? I'm going to build up a matrix of how much it costs to transform every prefix of this to every prefix of that. One special case of the prefix is the empty string. How much does it cost to transform S to an empty string, to the empty string? How much it costs to transform SK to an empty string, SKI to an empty string? This is going to be a row initialization, or maybe a column initialization. Again, it's somewhat symmetric depending on what is S and what is T. Likewise, I've got to compare what is the cost of comparing an empty string to all the prefixes of this string. That is going to be, I gather, a column initialization. Okay? I've got to initialize what the distance of such things are. And I do that through routines, row init and column init. If I was computing edit distance of strings, what would be the value? How much should it cost to transform S to the empty string? One, you should do it either an insertion or a deletion. SK to the empty string. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How much does it cost to transform the edit empty string to the empty string? Nothing. Okay, zero. It's it. Same thing. Okay? So the first part of my init program is initializing the values of the table. And as we see, what we initialize this to, slight changes in initialization can yield big differences in behavior. Okay? Then what are we going to do? For every character in the first string and every character in the second string, compute the three costs of, the last thing we did was substitute, match slash substitution, insertion or deletion. Only now, instead of doing a recursive call, we look the cost up in a table. Okay? We started out filling in the first row and the first column. If we now continue to march through our matrix, filling in values like this, what are the three values that a particular cell I and J are going to depend upon? They're going to depend upon the value I, basically, if we delete one from one character from the first string, or we delete one character from the second string, or we delete one character from both the first string and the second string. If you look at the indexes that we're calling here, the values that we're looking at for ij are I minus 1, J minus 1, I, J minus 1, I minus 1, J. If we fill in the table in such a way that the three values we need are already filled in, then we can just look them up rather than recompute them. Okay? Does everybody see that? We could fill them in this order. We couldn't just start in the middle and fill things in because we don't have the three values there. But if we systematically fill them in along rows or columns, or even along diagonals, okay? We really wanted to get fancy. We could fill them in along diagonals. We have the property that our three neighbors are sitting there waiting for us when we need them, right?
So now, what is the time complexity of this algorithm? How much time will it take? We have m times n cells, m is the length of the first string, n is the length of the second string. That loop is going to go around m times n times, total of m times n times. How much work do we do within the loop? We're doing three table lookups, three character comparisons. A character is, you know, takes one step to compare. Okay? We're going to now find the cheapest of those three options. Okay? How much time will this total work take within the loop? A constant amount of time. Maybe it's 10 steps, 50 steps, 100 steps, however you count, you're only going to get a constant. It doesn't depend upon the length of the string how long that takes. So this algorithm is going to take order n times n time. Okay? And then what do we do at the end? We identify what cell contains the value that we're interested in. Okay? And then return the value of that.
If we want to find the cheapest way to turn schema into scheme, if we're doing string matching, which is the cell that contains the optimal value, the final cost that we're interested in? Okay? Which cell? Okay? The one that's in the lower corner of the matrix, right? The one that's in the nth position. Because each cell that pays the cost of matching a prefix, the ij cell pays the cost of matching the first I characters with the first J characters. Therefore, the lower corner cell tells us the cost of matching the entire string. Any questions about that? Okay.
So again, to finish the job up, if we wanted to build a string comparison program, we need to describe how we initialize the rows and columns of the matrix. And that's pretty easy, okay? The cost of a, basically the way that we did it is that, what are we doing here? So it looks a little bit confusing. But basically we're going to be paying as a cost the cost of doing, how many insertions or deletions it takes to match that prefix, that empty prefix, with the desired, that many characters in of the string. The parent, okay, we're going to say is telling us which operation we did to get to that point. So if we are matching the zero, let's say we want to know what is the cost of the I row. We agree that if we're doing, matching a prefix of size I with the empty string, we agree that it's going to cost us I deletions to get there. That's what we're paying over here. That's where the I is. The cost of the ith value is I. And the operation we did to get here was a deletion. Okay? So it's going to tell us, the parent is going to tell us what operation did we use to get here. Here, if we go along a column, we did deletions. We went across rows, we did insertions. The cost for the ith such cell is I. And the only special case is when we consider the first insertion or deletion. What was the parent before that? Well, we need something to notify that we're at the end of the string, and that's what the minus ones here denote. Okay? That's basically saying that our parents would be doing deletions, 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 except for the corner element, that has no parent, because that's the start, matching the empty string to the empty string. Okay? Any questions about what row and init and column init do? Yeah? Yes, and M time. The question is there any way, this algorithm I'm saying is going to take NM time because we're filling in all the possible cells. I claim that you need to look at all NM cells in general if you want to convert one string to the other string. Because the conversion is telling you a trace of where you're doing your insertions and where you're doing your deletions. Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's not the cheapest way.
Well, it depends on, but our problem here is to find the cheapest way of doing it. It is not. Okay, so we're assuming you're willing to pay. This algorithm is very good if you're willing to spend quadratic time to find the cheapest way to match one string with another. Okay? If, on the other hand, you're not willing to spend that much time to find the cheapest way to do it, then maybe you would try some other algorithm. But these are for algorithms we're trying to find the best possible matching. Let's say you're trying to counterfeit something. Okay? You have a check of schemas, and you have a check that you can cash. And you want to get that check that you can cash charged to schemas' account. You know, for a lot of money here. You're willing to spend a lot of time to try to find what's the smallest number of changes you can make in order to change the bank numbers so that I will be able, you'll get stuck paying for your check. Okay? There's an example where you're willing to spend a lot of time to find the smallest number of changes. And that's the world that we're living in. Okay? You know, if you want to align sequences, it's very important that you get the sequences right. If you're willing to spend that time, you don't want a fast, crummy answer. You want the exact answer as fast as you can get it. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So we have the row and initialization, subroutines. We also have routines that compute the cost of a match or a mismatch. Again, in this particular edit distance computation, I'm returning a cost of 1 for any insertion or deletion. I am returning a cost of 0 if character C matches character D, and a cost of 1 if the characters that you're trying to compare are different. This is straight edit distance that I'm now doing. If you want to change it to a different cost measure, you just change the match subroutine or the indel subroutine. And finally, the other subroutine I didn't give you is you have to tell me what is the cell in the matrix that is the spinal cell of interest. And that, I claim, is given by the IJ, the cell described by the length of the string, the first string, the length of the second string. Basically, cell MN. Any questions? Okay? So, if you change these functions, you're going to get different behavior using the same basic string matching algorithm. Any questions? Okay, but what I give you is all the algorithm you need to do string matching, approximate string matching. So here's an example, okay, on an editing distance of two strings. Here I find update the Bible. You know the phrase, thou shalt not, and the modern thing would be, you should not, okay? How many changes, character changes, substitutions, insertions, deletions, do I need to convert one phrase to the other? If you look at this matrix, I tell you that the corner, lower corner element is 5. That tells me that you can make 5 such changes to convert thou shalt not to you shall not, should not. What are those 5 changes? Let's see if we can figure that out. Okay? I want to go from thou shalt not to you should not. Does anyone want to propose a way to do this in 5 changes? Okay. What?
I'm from the right side.
You want to start from the right side. You want to say this matches?
Match.
Now what you want to say is you space matches. D and T. You want to do a substitution. L and L. Now, how do you go from a shall and should? Okay. I suspect that what you want to do is to match the S and the H, and now somehow convert the A to an OU. Right? How can we do that cheaply? Substitute an A to an O or an A to a U and delete the other one, right? So a substitution delete combination will get us there. What about over here again? The O and the U will stay the same. Doing a substitution deletion. Okay, we're actually here, I guess it's an insertion because the extra characters are going up top, right? Substitution insertion. That would be a sequence of 5 changes that converts thou shalt not to you should not. Does everybody agree with that? Now, does everybody see that there are multiple ways of doing it? Okay, at the same cost. Okay, as we saw, we could either do the substitution to match the O and the U. We could have done the substitution to match the Y and the T or the Y and the H. I can see at least 4 optimal solutions to this. Okay? In general, there might be lots and lots of different transcripts that realize this cost. But the cheapest possible way costs us 5. Any questions? Now, how do we figure out, though, which string it was that actually that did the transformation? Well, we can basically walk backwards through this matrix and figure out how did we get here. Okay? I have here the other matrix that was produced with this thing. Remember, there were 2 matrices. There was a cost matrix and a parent matrix. Why did we keep track of the parent? The parent is going to be the one to tell us how do we go. Okay? To go back and do the reconstruction once we're done. Let's just see if this will work if we align this right. This probably is hopeless, isn't it? Yes? Okay? But let's take a look at this for just a second. Can we use the parent field to tell us how to do the reconstruction? I say we can, because remember, what did we put in the parent field? We stored either an insert, delete, or a substitute symbol to tell us what was the operation we did at that step to get to that place. So what was the operation we did in the last character position? It says that we did a 1, which if you go back to the earlier part of the program, stood for a substitute, right? First thing it did was try a match. So what happens? Match means walk up to the corner. 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 Walk up to the corner. Walk up to the corner. Walk up to the... Now, from this cell here, the operation is different. Okay? It is not the insertion, but corresponding to the substitution or the deletion. So where were we in our previous thing? Pop, 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 pop. Here we paid a cost of 4. Here we had a cost of 5. According to this, if we take a look at what our cost function was, we were doing matches, 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 a cost of 4. The cost did not change up that diagonal up until here. There it became a 4. That meant that the last substitute we did was not a 0 cost number, but a 1 cost number, because the cost went down by 1. So I claim that by walking back along the parent pointers, it can tell us what were the operations that we did. Okay? And walking back by hand is very confusing, but it is very, very easy to write a program, a subroutine, to trace back from those parent pointers to figure out or reconstruct the alignment that we have. Starting out from the IJ character, we're going to take a look and see what was the parent of cell IJ. If the parent was -1, that was the one symbol we gave to a cell that had no parent, right? So where were we in our traceback?
We were in the upper left-hand corner
of our traceback, and we're done, so we stop. Otherwise, what are the three possibilities? If the parent operation was a match, then what should we do? Well, we can reconstruct the earlier part of our transformation by continuing our path reconstruction from changing both indices, okay, back by 1. And then print out what we want printed out whenever we did a match. If the parent was an insertion, then keeping the insertion operation consistent with how it was defined, that corresponded to deleting a character from the last string. So the parent says, take us, that says, move us back to the IJ minus first cell. And then print out whatever you want on to denote the fact that we have actually done an insertion, okay, of the jth character in T. If the last character, if the parent pointer was a delete, go back and figure out delete from the first string and print out what you want to print out on a deletion. Okay? The actual thing that happens on the trace is determined by the three subroutines match out, insert out, and delete out. Okay? But I can make them do whatever I want, okay, in order to print out, reconstruct the substitution pattern. Any questions? Okay? So in my particular example, I used the following definitions. When I did an insertion, print out an I, deletion, print out a D. On a matching, print out either a match or a substitution, depending upon whether or not there was a matching of equal characters or a substitution. And that can be told by looking at the individual characters in mind. We know that this was a match of the ith and jth characters. Depending upon whether those characters are the same or different, I could figure out whether I was doing a match or a substitution. And using these routines in this bigger reconstruct path routine, it would print it out the following trace, which was delete the first symbol, do a substitution, match the next 5, insert, do a substitution, match the next 1, do a substitution, and match the last 4 of them. Okay? And that, I claim, is an equivalent solution to transforming thou shalt not to you should not. Any questions? Okay. The neat thing to look at with this recursive, with this reconstructive function, is that it is recursive. If you don't like recursion or you don't know recursion very well, look at what it's actually doing. It's actually kind of elegant. To print out, it's going to print out, although it's walking backwards from the nmth position in the matrix to the 00th position in the matrix, it's going to print out these transcripts in the right order. Why? Because it prints out all the earlier commands before it prints out this particular match. Okay? Any questions? So what I've given you here is a routine that will find edit distance, okay, for any, once you set the edit distance of these strings, once you set the cost for match and match, insert and deletion, and let you do whatever you want on traceback. Okay? So this is a nice general routine. Any questions? Any questions about how edit distance works? Okay? Any questions at all? I see people very quiet. I'm not sure I know exactly why. Okay? Questions? So the question is, do you need the parents matrix? And the answer is, not if you're clever enough. The parents matrix is telling you what decision did you make to get to this point, right? We have here the cost matrix. The parent matrix is telling you what decision did you make at this last spot. In fact, you could make the decision again at this point. Just stop and think about it. Suppose you know that you want to figure out, gee, what is the last thing you should do in this string? It's the cheapest of the three ways of going across, up, or diagonally with the appropriate sort of insertion, deletion costs. You could reconstruct the decision you made to get there. And so, in fact, you really don't need the parent pointer. Okay, but it makes things cleaner and easier. And in some problems, may not be as easy to reconstruct what the parent is. Okay? So you could, does everybody see that to fill in this value in the first place, you made a decision about what to do. Now that you know that this is the cell that you're interested in, you could again reconstruct what to do. Okay? How you got to this place. And that will tell you which cell did you come here from. And from this point, you could again look at the three possibilities around it and say, how did I get to this point? What was the cheapest point to get here? So you could figure out who your parents are as you walk and walk back along the matrix that way. Or it's easier just to know what your parent is and look it up. Okay, yes? I see. So the question is, how do you make a decision about which parent to go to if there are two possible equal cost paths to get there? This is a branching point. I could have either done a substitution or I could have done my deletion now. You know, something like that. That's the situation here. I have two possible choices. I can do deletion, substitution, or substitution, deletion. Both of them will lead to equal cost solutions. So I can return an arbitrary parent. This algorithm, my walking back algorithm, will return a solution, a trace that will generate the cheapest cost solutions. If I want all possible traces, I could do a brute force search, but that might be exponential. It's very easy to create a situation where there might be an exponential number of traces that will yield the same cost. So here I break guys arbitrarily. If you have a particular bias, you like substitutions more than deletions, go ahead and do them first. Okay? But so long as we walk back in a way that we could have gotten from there without changing the cost, that will give us a legal trace back. Any questions?
In that case, it was obvious that we don't take account from the lifetime because, in this case, the cost increased.
Okay, in this bit, again, exactly where we are in the matrix, I tend to get confused in the matrices. It should be clear from looking at this particular, sequence, taking there the OU to A transformation, there are two possible places to do it, right? I could do either delete substitute or substitute delete. The matrix, in either way I walk back, would give me the same cost. So somewhere in the matrix there was a branching point where I had two possible choices to go to that I could have gone back with at equal cost. Okay? And I basically will pick an arbitrary one. Okay? I think in the way my program is written now will be the first option I consider that yields that cost. Okay? But you should be aware that there are can be alternate solutions of equal score that you're not getting back with this method. Any questions? Okay? Good. So, here is again the simple recursive procedure to reconstruct the alignment. Okay? What I claim, though, is that the recursive reconstruction alignment routine and the edit distance routine are very general. They will work with different values of substitution, deletion, and insertion costs. And sometimes, different costs, by just changing the cost functions or changing the initializations, I can get interesting behavior from it, from the same basic algorithm I have shown you so far. Suppose I want to compute, given two strings, what is the longest common subsequence? Namely, if I wanted to find what is the longest common subsequence between schema and scanning, this is going to be an alignment where I maximize the number of characters at MAC. Okay, the longest common superstring, the longest common subsequence of these two strings is of length 4. The words SKIN and SKIN appear as scattered sequences in both of them. Suppose I wanted to compute the length of the longest subsequence. How could I do that? Well, I can do a dynamic programming solution, provided I never make it desirable to do substitution. Okay? What should the cost of the longest common subsequence be, the edit to distance value? I should get 1 for every character I match, and I should pay a penalty for insertions and deletions. If I want to find, and if I'm not allowed to do substitutions, the cheapest way to transform this to this is going to be what? I'm not allowed to do substitutions. Match and increase a common subsequence, and then delete all the characters that are not in that matching. That's the cheapest possible way to do it if I'm not allowed to do substitution. Does everybody sort of agree with that? So how can I find longest common subsequence? Same program as before, only change my match function. If for two characters are the same, I get a cost of 0 for matching them. But if two characters are different, I pay a humongous cost for matching them. So humongous, I'm never going to want to pay that. Okay, it's cheaper to just delete and insert than to do that substitution. Okay? By making this one change to my previous program, now I will compute, instead of the edit distance, I will in some sense compute the longest common subsequence. And by changing my traceback sequence, okay, like this, okay, now on an insert or a delete I do nothing, but when I actually do a match, I print out the characters. My traceback function will actually print out the common subsequence between the two of them. Okay? So this general dynamic programming thing easily extends to longest common subsequence as well. And does everybody see that by, if my actions on traceback are now only printing when I have a match, what is going to happen when I try to align abracadabra to abababa? Okay? I claim, it claims that the longest subsequence, in this case, let's just try it, abracadabra and abba baba,
was of 96. What was it? Abracadabra and abba abba baba. Okay? Can we align these two?
Looks like
there is an alignment with six changes, right? With six magic characters. Okay? The way I do it is I charge so much for a substitution that I'm going to try to maximize my matches to minimize my insertions and deletions. Okay? Any questions? And since I'm trace back, all I do is I print out the match only when they match. I print out the actual subsequence. Any questions? Okay? Let me show you one other application of my edit distance function, which is extremely useful. It is sort of substring matching instead of matching the entire pattern. Let's say I wanted to find out where Skeena appears in a long document. Let's say they're writing a long document. There's a document about all the bad professors at Stony Brook. It's a long document, no doubt. Okay? And it may very well be that the person producing it might have misspelled my name. How can I find where is it that Skeena appears in this document? Okay? I would like to find, to be precise, an alignment between this long document, this long text file, where does the pattern Skeena most naturally appear in it? Now what would happen if I did the global alignment between string alignment of matching the long document against the short pattern? What would be the likely cost of the match? Can anybody sort of figure that out? Okay. What would likely happen if I'm searching a 100,000 character string and looking for the pattern Skeena? What would happen if we did that with the comparison out of what we did so far?
Lots of deletes.
You would get lots of deletes if S-K-I-E-N-A appeared as a scattered substring anywhere in the document. It would be very, very happy to match Skeena to this, okay, by just picking the letters in isolation, okay? The K may have come from Arkin, okay? The, other these things could have come scattered around the room, okay? So, what do I need to do? If I did a global alignment, I don't get very much sensitivity for short patterns. Does everybody sort of see that? How can I get some sensitivity for short patterns? Namely, I want to find out that if Skeena was spelled S-K-I-E-N-A, and then you did with two N's, that's more common, okay, in the middle of the document, how can I arrange my alignment, my cost, and my initialization so that shows up well? Okay? I claim I can do the following two things. First, if I want to see where this pattern occurs in the document as a substring, what should be the cost of matching an S 100,000 characters into the string with the first S in Skeena? What should that cost be? Okay? Should that be high or low? Matt, it wasn't say that there is an S occurring 100,000 characters into the document. What should the cost of matching that S be with the first S of Skeena? Okay? Should be zero or something like that. Okay? In the string matching, we were mapping the whole string against the whole string. I had to assume I had to delete those first 100,000 characters, right? But what if I set the initialization of this row to all zeros? Then I claim that in matching schema with schema, there's going to be a nice diagonal of zeros going down where schema exactly appears, right? Okay? So if we want to do a substring matching, I claim that a better thing to do is to initialize the top row. Instead of it being the ith value be equal to I, have the ith value equal 0 for all I. Okay? And then a schema match will show up sensitively as a diagonal of 0. Okay, where a schema non-match will show up, there'll be a 1 here for that substitution of that second, or an insertion of a second end. Okay? So that's one thing that differs from string matching. What else differs between string matching and substring matching? The initialization condition and what else? Okay? Yes? Where the final answer is. Suppose this document was 200,000 characters long, and schema appeared in the 100,000th position. What is the string mapping solution going to be? In the lower, the far right corner, it's going to basically be the cost of the text minus those 6 substitutions. What I claim is, the right way to look for the goal solution is to check the cost of matching the whole length of schema against every possible cell in that, against every possible prefix of the rest of that string, the text string. And the place where there is the lowest cost, that describes the last position of the match, of the cheapest match, between this string and anything else in the text. How do you sort of see it? Any questions? What? It could be that Skeeter was such a bad professor in this thing that Skeeter occurred several times. Okay, in which case there might be several zeros in that lower row. Several equivalent solutions, equally good matches of Skeeter and that. Okay? So what is the difference? What is a program to do sub-matching? Well, all I have to change are 2 things from my string matching. My initialization is now going to be that the row initialization, the ith value is now assigned the cost of 0, meaning I'm not charged for matching a prefix. The parent of a cell in the along that row is -1 because it doesn't have any parents. Once we hit that top row, we finish our matching. Okay? To find the goal cell, what are we going to do? We look at all possible elements, okay? For the entire length of the second string, we're going to look at the length of the first string, okay? K, at every cell that is the length of the first string, for all possible choices, all possible prefixes of the length of the second string. I'm going to take the smallest one, the index of this one that gives us the smallest cost. Okay? And then walking back from that cell will tell us where does this substring occur in the false text. Any questions? Question? So the question is here we've got a string that this is going to be M. If this is N, is there any chance that the cheapest match might be in something before the first N positions of the row? Is it possible that do I have to look at the first N cells? Well, first of all, it's cheap to look at them. But second, it might very well be necessary. What if the whole spring was S schema, was S followed by, let's say, question mark, question mark, question mark. That was the text I was matching. The cheapest way to do that might be to just match the S and go straight down and do deletions. So it is currently possible that the cheapest solution might actually appear here. Okay? So I have to check all possible elements to be sure I find the cheapest match. Any questions? So the really neat thing here is that about all the power that I'm getting, that by changing sort of just cost functions and changing initialization conditions, I can do longest common substring. I can do substring matching. I can do string edit distance. Okay? And as we can see, we'll see in the next class, I can compute a lot of something even more sensitive, literally local alignment scores, okay, for biologically interesting sequences. Okay? Any questions? Okay, but the important thing is to understand how these algorithms work, why they work, why they are n squared in time, and to see how with relatively minor changes you can adjust them to different cost functions. Okay, so then our two questions for next class are going to be, is what should the right cost function be, and what other adjustments can I make to get more power, more different kinds of matchings, okay, in basically the same asymptotic time. Any questions? Okay, thanks a lot, and we'll talk about that next class.